Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Network is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalnetwork.com. So we continue our journey towards the 250th anniversary of our country, July 4th, 2026. Do the math when it all started. You got it. We have with us today a gentleman. He's a very entertaining guy. His name is Robert Riles, and he is going to talk to us today about the role of religion in the American Revolution, specifically Scotch-Irish Presbyterians. So before we get into all that, Robert, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I am a Floridian by birth.
Floridian.
Yes, Floridian by birth. I was born and raised in Tallahassee, Florida. Have a master's degree in history and another master's degree in library science. I'm a big believer in teaching informally to the general public, and that was what drew me into the field of public history. I was volunteering at a 17th century Spanish mission site. That was the anchor point for Spanish Florida in the 17th century. I was volunteering there, dressing up in funny clothes like what you see me today.
Yeah.
And I decided to pursue that line as an academic field.
Good for you.
For me, yeah.
And so you are doing a series of seminars, presentations, whatever you're going to call them, as part of the 250th commission here in South Carolina?
Yeah, that's true. A couple of years ago, I approached Gina Bobo with the Lancaster County 250 committee to work on a grant where we would tell some of these stories about the Presbyterians in the backcountry of South Carolina, their role during the American Revolution, and a focus on the devout Presbyterian men of the cloth and what their experiences were. And so what I do is a program about a historical figure who lived in what is today present-day Chester County, not far from Great Falls. His name was Reverend William Martin. It's sort of a edutaining type of program, a storytelling type of event.
Well, you get a perfect format here to tell a story, because that's what we do in radio all the time. We tell stories. So I'm going to let you go ahead and start telling this story. But before you do that, I'm interested in the Scotch-Irish Presbyterians. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they came over here from Scotland and Ireland, they brought their Presbyterianism with them, right?
Truly.
And from that, over time, other denominations have shown themselves down here. But back then, if you didn't go to the Presbyterian church, you probably weren't going to the church. Is that about right?
Well, truly. The roots of the Presbyterian church are in Scotland. It's known as the Church of Scotland, or the Kirk of Scotland. And during the 17th century, and even a little bit before then, there was this contentiousness, this competition between the Anglican church, also known as the Church of England, and the Church of Scotland. And that contentiousness continued to be impactful, and there was this friction point between the Presbyterians and the Anglicans. And that grew in the roots of the English Civil War as well in the mid-17th century. And over a period of time, the Anglicans, as well as the monarchs, specifically Charles I, King Charles I of England, began to issue these oppressive policies against the Presbyterians, trying to force them into compliance with following the dictates of the Anglican Church. Well, what do these Presbyterians do, being Scots? Of course, they're going to say no. And they continued in their devout Presbyterian ways. And as a consequence of that, they were persecuted. There was a time in Scottish history known as the Killing Time, where it got to that point where Presbyterians were being killed off for refusing to take loyalty oaths to the king. Many of them were forced out of Scotland to flee to Northern Ireland, what we today call Northern Ireland, but was then known as the Ulster Plantation. Six different counties of Northern Ireland. And they settled for a brief time there in the early part of the 18th century. Some of them stayed for as long as they could tolerate it. But because it was difficult for them to acquire land and economic opportunity, they were forced to pay high tenant rents to these greedy British landlords that controlled the land, that it really was like a push factor for them to seek economic opportunity. And where was that economic opportunity?
America.
Of course,
yeah.
America, the colonies, and religious toleration, where they could practice their faith without being hindered or persecuted by the Anglican Church.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the fact that they really couldn't exist because of this contentiousness or discrimination, if you call it what you want, they just said, we got to get out of here.
They were basically a marginalized people.
Yeah.
You know, the 18th century. And they essentially, they lived in their own enclaves in Ireland, where they basically practiced their Presbyterian faith in these enclaves, or conventicles, as they were called. And they came largely through Pennsylvania in the early part of the 18th century, but also Delaware, Virginia, and the Carolinas. And this particular program that I do about Reverend William Martin, this was a group of Presbyterians that were known as the Covenanters. These were radical, militant type of Presbyterians who swore an oath to what was known as the Solemn League and Covenant, in which they and their ancestors had swore this oath that they would defend the Presbyterian Church against interlopers at all costs, right? And that was part of this contentiousness that occurred during and after the English Civil War. Now, what's interesting about this is that culturally and socially, these ideas continue to exist among the Covenanters, even when more mainstream moderate Presbyterians, after suffering so much persecution because of the killing times, decided to take a more moderate stance. The Covenanters still thrived as a Presbyterian sect. And Reverend Martin was the leader of a particular group of Covenanters that lived in County Antrim in Northern Ireland. And again, because of the same pull-push factors, the push factors being they needed to go somewhere to experience a better way of life, and the pull factor of that economic opportunity. He read some of the different advertisements that were being promoted by colonial agents in Ireland. Right.
And pay us a fee and we'll get you to America.
That's right. And it's like, okay, well, South Carolina seems to have the most generous land bounties available.
Were they also real estate brokers?
You could say that.
Oh, I
yes.
just wondered. Okay.
In a sense, more like
we'll get you
promoters.
There. We'll get you there, and here's a plot of land so you can set up shop. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, they encouraged. It's like, hey, you know, come to South Carolina, land of opportunity and freedom. And by the way, you know, if you come, you can apply for, and if you're eligible, then you'll get 100 acres of free land if you're the head of a family.
How about that?
And then another 50 acres for each member of your family.
Wow.
That is a huge land bounty.
Now, who was offering that land bounty? I mean, who?
This was the colony of South Carolina. Now, there was,
okay.
Now, there was a reason for this.
All right.
It wasn't just because the colony was being, you know, generous to the Scotch-Irish.
Yeah.
No, they had their reasons why. And that reason why had to do with the backcountry, had to do with the Cherokee Indians, and concerns about Native American uprisings, specifically Cherokee, and raids and attacks on the backcountry settlements that were already there, a few, but also, more specifically, attacks on the Low Country and the Low Country elites that had these vast, you know, plantations, plantations, and indigo plantations.
So if you come here, if you're a Scotch-Irish, you come here, we're going to set you up, but you have to be in our, whatever you want to call it, militia, and be called upon anytime we need your help.
Basically, yeah, that was the understanding, not necessarily written in terms, but that was the understanding that that was what they had to do.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So this obviously was successful because we had enough people to come over here and colonize our back country.
Well, it wasn't just coming in through the Port of Charleston, which is what Reverend William Martin's group did.
Okay.
Most of them came down what was known as the Great Wagon Road that started west of Philadelphia, west, and then south into the western part of Virginia, and then down into the Carolinas.
So nobody else in that travel on the Great Wagon Road, no other colony was offering the same kind of proposal. Let's say in Virginia, they didn't offer this kind of incentive for them to colonize there versus here?
Well, they did offer incentives, but South Carolina was the most generous, according to Reverend Martin.
Okay. All right.
Right.
All right. So Reverend Martin gets here.
He gets here 1772. Now, it wasn't just Martin. He recruits members of his congregation, and he also advertises in the newspapers that we are going to South Carolina. So he recruits 457 families from County Antrim.
Whoa!
From different little townships there in Antrim. And then most of these were members of his congregation of Covenanter Presbyterians. But there were also some that weren't part of his congregation that joined them. Now, you're probably asking, why would Reverend Martin recruit people outside of this very insular, very protective religious sect of Presbyterians? Well, the reason why is to help offset the cost of the voyage, and they needed people to do that.
Yeah.
So the result was basically 457 families. That's by one estimate, historical account estimate, over 1,000 souls.
How long did it take to get them here?
Well, it could take anywhere between 3 to 6 months. They left in five ships in October of 1772, and they arrived one at a time in December.
Jeez.
Now, it was a rough voyage across the high seas, and it was that way in the 18th century. And this is another reason why their experience is really a case example of what the immigration experience was like in the 18th century. You know, when you live aboard ship in the 18th century, not only are people experiencing problems with seasickness, I mean, today, that's the big deal. But we've also seen under modern times where there's some serious things that break about, you know, aboard ships that people get sick and sometimes die of.
Right.
Well, it was even more so in the 18th century. And there was a smallpox outbreak that took place among that fleet, and five children died during that voyage.
Mm.
Yeah, five children. Others got sick, had dysentery, you had other diseases, typhus could break out, but in this case, they lost five young children in that voyage. They arrived in December of 1772 and were temporarily quarantined on Sullivan's Island. That was something that was a requirement if you had an outbreak of any illness, specifically smallpox. But it was brief. And in January 73 is when they begin to apply for their land grants in the backcountry.
So was it the land grant that brought them up here?
Yes. It was a number of different land grants that were issued by the colony of South Carolina. And in this book that was part of my research, which is a wonderful book that was published in the 20th century, titled Scotch-Irish Migration to South Carolina, 1772, by a female historian named Jean Stevenson. She did an incredible amount of historical research on Martin's life, his congregation, but also an incredible trove, an incredible treasure for genealogists doing family research. Here are the names of all those that applied for and received those land grants in the back country. Now, a large percentage...
I wonder if Reinhardt is in there. That's where the empire started. Very interesting.
But there was a large concentration that settled in what was known as the Upper Camden District. That really constitutes present-day Kershaw, Fairfield, Lancaster, York counties. Mm-hmm. You know, a large concentration of them settle there. And then there is another large concentration that settles on the other side, on the western side of the Broad River, which was then known as the 96th District. And so there were other areas where these families immigrated to and lived, but that was the largest concentration.
Interesting.
Here, yeah.
All right, we're going to have to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders, and of course by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. So I did not tell you about this, Robert, even though we had a half hour before the show began.
Oh my goodness.
We do a little thing here called make sandwiches and salads, fresh sandwiches and salads, here at Substation 2. Now, the way we do it is in the white letters, and at the count of three, we're all going to bellow it out together. Pretty simple to do, right? All right. So at the count of three, let's tell everybody what we do here at Substation 2. One, two, three.
Slice, garden.
You got it. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
Hit the spot, definitely. Friends are great, and the company's great, and the food is fantastic. Red's fresh, and they make my special for me every day.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Have you been personally managing your investment account? Are you happy with your results? Maybe you should consider hiring a genuine money manager. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see how they can help you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or online at andersongriggs.com.
Start your journey with a new auto loan. Get on the road with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. From city streets to off-road trails, your journey begins here. Our competitive rates can get you on the road in a ride that fits your lifestyle and budget, with no payments for up to 90 days. You can apply for a pre-approved spending limit valid for 30 days before you start shopping. Visit one of our many convenient office locations or go to foundersfcu.com/auto to apply for an auto loan today. Membership qualification required. See webpage for details.
More than 40 years ago, Piedmont Medical Center opened with a promise to provide compassionate, high-quality care. This year, we step forward as Piedmont Medical Network. 2 hospitals, 4 emergency departments, and hundreds of dedicated physicians evolving to care for you today and for generations to come. As we grow and expand, one thing remains the same: our commitment to caring for our neighbors. We are Piedmont Medical Network. Find a doctor at piedmontmedicalnetwork.com/about.
For more than 130 years, Comporium has been a part of the fabric of this community. We've grown alongside schools, organizations, and local businesses, always committed to helping this place we call home succeed. Comporium employees aren't strangers. They're friends, family, and neighbors you see every day. Where others see customers, we see community. We give back, building trust that lasts for generations. Comporium, here for you.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Good fresh food, even fresher than Subway. And it's also on the paleo diet.
I like the people. I like the food. And being picked on.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
Back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. A gentleman by the name of Robert Riles is with us, and he has given us one heck of a story about how the Scotch-Irish got over here. And it all centers around a guy by the name of Reverend William Martin, who managed to take 457 of his fellow persecuted members of the Scotch-Irish Presbyterian Church and got them over here to America on five ships. Mm-hmm. It took 3 months to get them all over here, mm-hmm. and they're smashed into this ship in all kinds of horrible conditions. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being on a ship for 3 months, basically in the hold of the ship, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you're stacked up there belly to belly. And, of course, a lot of these ships were also transporting slaves. No?
No. Well, to a limited number, but whenever there were instances where they were acquiring enslaved persons, it was usually done in Charleston.
Okay.
Now, one thing to keep in mind is in the back country, it wasn't like in the low country during this time. The larger populations of the enslaved persons were in the low country, not necessarily in the back country. Also, you know, it is interesting how Reverend Martin is really a case study for this mass migration. It's known as the Great Migration from Ireland, where they are doing this every day. Ships are sailing out of Belfast and Larne every day. And so they are, ships are coming in, 3 to 6 months journey. In this case, in Martin's example, 457, 1,000 souls settle in the back country. Mostly, there are a couple of instances where they settled in the low country, but for all intents and purposes, concentrated in the back country for the specific purpose of providing a barrier against the Cherokee, yeah. and concerns of raids by the Cherokee during this time.
So they knew all this coming in. I mean, they were so...
Not necessarily. You know, some of them would come in and they had no idea what they were getting into coming in the back country. The fortunate thing is that Martin's group arrived later in 1772. There were already Scotch-Irish that were here in the back country as early as the 1750s. And fortunately, they were there to provide some sense of understanding of what it meant to live on the frontier for those newcomers like Martin.
Oh, my. Well, they couldn't turn around and go back.
No, they couldn't.
They're here.
No, they couldn't.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get them all here.
Yeah.
We have 457. We started with 457. Mm-hmm. Have no idea what the actual number was that made it through that awful trip.
Right.
And then they have to come all the way from Charleston up to here.
Yeah.
They got a land grant, and to come here, here's 100 acres, 50 acres more for every kid you got in the family, and away we go. And not only do we have to figure out how we're going to live,
yeah.
how we're going to make some money,
right?
And also we have to protect everybody in the militia from the Native Americans, the Cherokees.
Yes.
Wow, what a deal.
Yeah, and the fortunate thing is that there was a militia type of system that had been implemented in the British
sure.
Isles. That's where our fundamental understanding of the militia system and its importance really came from. So undoubtedly, some of these guys, by the way, you had to be between 16 and 60 to be a member of the militia. That was a requirement.
Okay.
And so they did have some understanding of that. But in terms of subsistence crops, not necessarily. And so they would learn that from their neighbors that had already settled there. Now, they were quite familiar with the linen, you know, growing linen and growing flax and manufacturing linen.
Right.
They were quite familiar with doing that, but the subsistence crops, not necessarily so. And so they did receive some assistance and guidance from those who were already living in the backcountry. Of course, this is Martin's experience. Again, late arrivals in the colonial era. Now, what's also interesting is at this time, you know, there was an awareness because of newspapers of what was going on in the colonies, you know, and this big concern, this development that had happened where there was rumor, speculation of being anti-British, crown type of sentiment because of the Stamp Act, because of the Tea Act and the Intolerable Acts that would happen later on. But it was kind of regarded that was stuff that was going on in the northern colonies. You know, that was their problem. That was Boston's problem, not necessarily South Carolina's problem. And besides, if you live in the back country, you're far and away from all that business. That's you know, a problem for the low country, not the back country, until the year 1780. And what happened in the year 1780? Well, the British, which had attempted first in June 1776 to capture Charlestown, which effectively, in their minds, would have meant the capitulation of South Carolina. But guess what? They failed.
Yeah.
And this year, we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of that battle, known as the Battle of Sullivan's Island. And then for a time, there was a brief pause in the action. And then it was really beginning in 1778, in which the British revisited the strategy of capturing the South. It was known as the Southern Campaign or the Southern Strategy. And the idea was this: go south, capture Savannah, which Georgia was considered the weakest link in the chain of the 13 English colonies that decided to break away from Britain. Capture Savannah, and then gradually establish a foothold in the low country of South Carolina. If you capture Charlestown, that is the New York City of the South. Truly, it was considered, you know, the jewel of the South. You capture Charleston, then you use that as a base of operations, and then launch your operations in the back country. They were nearly successful in doing this.
Key word being nearly.
Nearly. 78, they capture Savannah. 79 to early 80, they began to launch raids into the low country by land. And then in the early spring of 1780, the British Army and then eventually the British Navy surround the neck of Charleston. And the Southern Department, under the command of General Benjamin Lincoln, is bottled up on the peninsula at Charleston. They are captured on May 12th, 1780. Over 5,000 Continental soldiers and Whig militia from North Carolina are captured that day. It was the worst defeat of the American Revolution at that time, right? Worst defeat. And the British, minimal losses.
You know, that started the ball rolling.
Now, there was one Continental Army, that had not been captured. That was under the command of Colonel Abraham Buford. It was sent from Virginia to provide a relief for those in Charleston. They encountered the British Legion at a place called the Waxhaws, which is about 9 miles east of present-day Lancaster. There was a battle known as Buford's Massacre, and that is what set off this chain of
events.
Yeah.
We set the British packing. Get them out of here. Okay, Robert, thank you for being with us. Very interesting. I wish we could do this for about an hour.
Yeah.
That was a great story. You did a great job on that. Thank you for being with us. And, of course, we want to remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Caporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. One more time, we're going to tell the masses out there what the heck we do inside here in Substation 2. And besides, enjoy the nice cool air. We prepare fresh subs and salads. We do it 6 days a week between 10 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. How we do it at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.